Welcome to Yanker Jacks with Brian Swope.
Dynamite drop in, Monty. That broadcast school has really paid off.
Part of the Gateway City Sports Podcast Network.
Guys, welcome back. Good to have you this week. I'm looking forward to today's show. It's going to be fun. I got a guest on that I think you guys are going to enjoy. He's got a lot of great insight, and we're going to look at some other things, but let's talk first, leading in, about the Cardinals. You know what? Took 2 of 3 from the Giants coming out of the break, 3 of 4 from the Cubs, and then we go to Cincinnati, and oh no, we suck again. Oh my goodness gracious, what are we going to do with this team? Just when you think that this team is going to get on a roll, just when you think that things are going to get better, all of a sudden they get worse. And, you know, we had a perfect opportunity to move solidly into second place in the division, situate ourselves pretty well, keep pace with the Brewers, and we just couldn't get it done. We dropped 2 of 3 in Cincinnati. They had an off day yesterday. And so now we've got to regroup. We've got to regroup and find out what's going on with this team. You know, I don't know if they're going to be buyers or sellers at the deadline. I don't expect Mo to make any big move. I don't see the history of it as far as, you know, big, you know, deals in season. I mean, there was, you know, the big Colby Rasmus trade and then, you know, the Matt Holliday trade. But in recent years, Mo has seemed content at the deadline to just kind of pick up, you know, itty bitty pieces, reclamation projects, or, you know, just tiny pieces to, you know, fill different holes on the roster. And I don't see it coming this year. I don't see a big move coming this year. And if I'm being honest, I look at this roster and I think, where can you make an addition? Really, when you look at the offense in particular, where are you going to make an addition on this offense? Who are you going to replace? I would not replace Bader. I never thought I would say that. But the man is playing out of his mind. He's been by far, just from a, you know, runs created an offensive standpoint, been the best player on the team here over the last, you know, few weeks since he's come back off the IL. And so I wouldn't replace Bader. You're not going to replace Tyler O'Neill. You know, Dylan Carlson is your right fielder of the future, squarely in the rookie of the year conversation, although my personal pick for rookie of the year right now would be Trevor Rogers, the pitcher from Miami. But that having been said, who are you going to replace on the infield? You're not getting rid of Goldie. You're not getting rid of Arenado. Yachty is Yachty. Up the middle, there's where you have your conversation. Do you want to stick and hope that Paul DeJong can find some form? Do you want to trust Paul DeJong, or do you want to try to make an upgrade there? What upgrades are available? What's out there? The same would be said of Tommy Edman. I like Tommy Edman. Don't get me wrong. I love Tommy Edman. And I was one of his big supporters at the beginning of the season. I still think he's a solid second baseman. Now, offensively, he's tailed off quite a bit since his hot start to the season. And he had a very, very hot start to the season. He was near the league leader in hits for quite a while. But that having been said, he's kind of tailed off a little bit. And so you got to stop and think. There's the two, from what I can see, the two offensive pieces that you could replace would be shortstop and second base. There's guys out there. Trevor Story's name has been thrown about, although I don't see the Rockies wanting to dip their feet into that waters again with the Cardinals, not after what happened with Arenado. Then we have, you know, Javi Baez, who's going to be a free agent. I don't like him. I don't think the Cubs would even trade him in within the division, for sure, especially not to the Cardinals. And when I say I don't like Javi, here's what it is. And last night epitomizes it. They're in Cincinnati. He has some, you know, standoff with Amir Garrett, hits a walk-off, what would be a walk-off double, and instead of running to the base, he walks down jawing and yelling at Garrett the entire way. And, you know, honestly, I think it would have been just absolutely hilarious if the outfielder had gotten the ball, thrown it to first, and gotten him out. Regardless of whether or not the run scores, I think it would have just been hilarious if he would have thrown it in and gotten Baez out at first. That just would have been brilliant. I mean, that there's no place in the game for that kind of crap. I mean, let's put the talent aside, and nobody's denying the talent that Javi Baez has. Talent aside, there's no place in the game for that kind of behavior. There just isn't. And, you know, there's a difference between being flashy and being very loud and outspoken and you know, pretty cocky, like, you know, Fernando Tatis. But there's a completely different, it's something completely different whenever you are just trying to show people up. And when you just, there's no respect, no respect, you know, and I feel the same way about Ronald Acuna Jr., a fantastic player, amazing player, incredibly gifted and talented player. But you're not out there to just show people up and to have this, oh, look at me, I'm the greatest kind of an attitude. No, you know what? The greatest players that have ever played the game are some of the most humble players ever, and, you know, with few exceptions, but some of the greatest players were some of the absolute most humble guys and were just so respectful of the game, so respectful of their fellow competitors. You know, I think of guys like, you know, Willie Mays. I think of guys like Hank Aaron. You know, I think of guys even like, you know, Lou Brock, Stan Musial, you know, Bob Gibson was, he was a little edgy, but, you know, at the same time, he had some respect for the game. And that's the thing, like, just respect the game. Don't go out there and, you know, make it all about you. Just have fun with the game, okay? Just get out there and just enjoy the game itself. But moving on, like talking more about what's going on with the Cardinals, I really don't see where they're going to make an upgrade. You know, it's been said that it's been said that Trey Turner might be on the block. I think Trey Turner would be a fantastic addition. I think he would be an incredible pickup for the Cardinals. I just don't see it happening. If there's anybody that the Cardinals are going to get from Washington, I would say it would be Max Scherzer. And it's been said that he is willing to waive his no-trade clause. And it's also been said, I can't remember where I read this, but I did read it, that Scherzer would be willing to waive his no-trade clause in order to get an extra extension on his deal, like an extra year or two. You know what? That would be phenomenal if the Cardinals could pull that off, because if you think about it, it takes away the risk of having just a one-year rental. And, you know, that's been the big, you know, hesitation, I think, as far as making a deal for some of these guys go, is you don't want to trade, you know, your future for, you know, a rental. But this, I think, would be a perfect fit for St. Louis and for Scherzer as well. He's a St. Louis guy. He's from the area. by all accounts, he wanted to be here before the Nationals signed him. And so, I think it might be a good fit. I think it'd be a perfect fit, and it would really shore up the rotation. You know, we're having troubles right now, you know, with the rotation. You can't bank on Flaherty and Michaelis coming back healthy. You got to make a move. And if that is the weakest spot, if that's where you think you can shore it up, then you got to do it. You got to make that move. But I would also contend that there's some bullpen additions that need to be made as well. We need guys who can throw strikes out there and get guys out and stop walking people. So anyway, let me get off of the Cardinals, because I can talk about them all day long without stopping. So we'll stop there. Some news coming out of Mizzou. Athletic director Jim Sterk is stepping down, and that's going to leave a bit of a hole. Jim Sterk took over 5 years ago, and I want to say he kind of took over an athletic program that was looking for its identity. He hired Coach Konzo Martin. He hired Coach Eli Drinkwitz. And there's been sort of a resurgence, I feel like, the last couple of years in Mizzou athletics. And you look at it, and they've just had their biggest fundraising year to date, like their biggest fundraising year ever this past year. And the athletics department really seems like it's on an upswing. And this, to me, comes at a very interesting point in time where, you know, the SEC is expanding, and we're getting some old, you know, Big 12 rivals, originally from the Big 8, you know, that are coming in as well. And so, there's talk of even more coming in. So I don't know what this means for Mizzou, what it means for the athletic program. I mean, surely they're going to find somebody that can continue to take Mizzou athletics, you know, further and farther and higher. But it's confusing to me. I don't think all the details are out yet as to just exactly why he's stepping down. But it seems odd that you would be in the middle of that much success and just start to walk away, just kind of say I'm done. And it apparently it's nothing to do with him and the school, from a relations standpoint, because he's going to stay on until they find a new athletic director. So it makes me wonder if this is just not something, you know, personal for Jim, if he just wants to step down. Maybe he wants to retire, spend time with family, or maybe, God forbid, there's a health issue or something. Jim Sterk stepping down, I think, is going to leave a huge void at Mizzou. I think he's done a fantastic job, and I hate to see him go, but at the same time, you know, if he can't do it, if either his heart's not in it, or if he just feels like he's not capable, or if he feels like somebody else can do a better job than he can, then obviously it's time. But you know, we're gonna hate to see him go, hate to see him leave. And you know, Jim, best of luck to you. I wish you the best, whatever the issue is, whatever the situation is. Thank you for everything that you've done for the University of Missouri. It's been fantastic. So moving on, the Blues made a big trade since the last time we talked. I think I can't remember. These days are getting so confusing as to, you know, which days I've talked about what. But then since the last time we were together, the Blues acquired Pavel Buchnevich. I think that's how you say his name. Pavel Buchnevich from the New York Rangers. And we sent Sammy Blay along with our second round pick in 2022. And, you know, I don't know much about him, but what I do know, and this is just from looking on paper, I think this is going to be a good deal. I think it's going to be a good trade. You look at, oh man, guys, I'm so sorry. I'm yawning so much this morning. I'm so tired. It's been a long week. So bear with me this morning. But looking at it on paper, I think that this is going to be a good move. Bukovic is 26 years old, so a year older than Sammy Blais. But he scored 28 goals and 48 assists in 48 games last season, 68 points. He scored more goals last year than Sammy Blais has scored in his entire career. So, I mean, when you're looking for, you know, something that could spark the offense, help score more goals, I mean, get to the net, get the puck in the net, this seems like a really good move. And that's not to say anything bad about Sammy. I liked Sammy Blais as a player. I really do. But this seems like a move that's really going to take this offense a little bit further. And we needed it. We needed it. Obviously there was some underperformance on the offensive side of the puck last year. And Tarasenko just didn't come back quite as strong as we would have hoped that he would. And so you hope that the injury issues are behind him. Still don't know if he's going to be traded or not. He reportedly wants out. So we'll keep monitoring that situation and see what's going on there. But this is a good move. This is a good move. I like what Armstrong's doing. He usually puts together a very competitive roster. And one thing we know about Armstrong is that he wants to do what it's going to take to win. He wants to make sure that he has all angles and everything covered. So speaking of coverage, sometimes you need to make sure that everything is taken care of, the things that are important in life. You want to make sure that you've got everything in order and under control. That's when you need insurance. But not just any insurance will do. You need Allstate. That's why the Wiley Group has two locations in Festus and Arnold to serve you. They offer home, auto, boat, motorcycle, business, life insurance, investments, and so much more. They use a customized approach that is tailor-made to meet your needs. So give Sean and his team a call today at 636-764-6294. They can help you with an insurance quote right over the phone. Or if you just want to talk sports, they can do that too. Don't have time to call? Just email Sean at SeanWiley@allstate.com and learn more about the coverage options that you need to keep you and your family protected. And remember, you're in good hands with Allstate. Gang, I am having so much fun with this. I'm having so much fun doing this podcast. I'm having so much fun, you know, being able to, you know, just talk to you guys and share, you know, my perspective on sports and what's going on in the St. Louis sports world. Thank you so much. You guys have made this an incredible, incredible experience. And, as always, I could not do this without the listeners, could not do this without my great sponsors, without the team over at Gateway City Sports. You guys have been phenomenal. We've had some crazy awesome guests come on here, and it's just been an absolute joy to be able to do this and to have this experience and to share this with you. So I'm hoping, looking forward to bigger and better things. And I just wanted to take this moment just to say thank you. Thank you to you guys. Thank you to those who listen. And make sure that if you like the podcast, make sure you go on wherever you listen. Give us a good review. Share us out with your friends. And let's keep this thing moving. Let's keep it going, because we can't do this without you. And I want you to know that I absolutely, completely, 100% appreciate you and your support. So thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Okay, now it's time for the Holy Smokers guest line. When it's time to add a little spice to your life, make your next grilling adventure a spiritual experience with Holy Smokers Rub Company. They have several different flavors to choose from. Each one is specially blended for a taste sensation that you will pray never ends. The best part is all proceeds go towards helping families who are going through the process of adopting a child. So look them up on Facebook and be sure to use coupon code GCS10. That's GCS, the number 10, for 10% off your order. Holy Smokers Rub Company, bless your taste buds. And joining me today is a friend of mine, someone whose work I enjoy very much, and I'm sure you do as well. If you have heard of him, he writes over at Birds on the Black, and you will know him probably best as the host of Prospects After Dark, my friend Kyle Reese. Kyle, how are you doing?
Brian, I feel honored to be a part of this. Thank you for inviting me on.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So there's a lot going on in the world of Cardinals baseball, but your area of expertise is definitely on the prospect side. Not that you don't know other stuff. I mean, you know a lot of stuff, and in a lot of ways, you know a lot more than I do. But when it comes to prospects, there are a few guys that I turn to or trust more than you do, or than you. And so I wanted to get your take on a couple of things. First of all, the draft. By all accounts, I think we had a pretty good draft. What surprised you the most, and which one of those guys coming out of that draft maybe excites you the most?
I'll start with the one that I think excites me the most, and it's the same as everyone else. It's the Cardinals' second-round pick, the kid that they took 54th overall, outfielder Joshua Baez. He's a big kid, and when you see him physically, he reminds you of all of the comps that all of the pundits make. He reminds you of Aaron Judge. He reminds you of Giancarlo Stanton. He has that physically imposing frame that you know this 18-year-old is going to continue to put weight on and get stronger and better. You know, he swings and misses a lot for an 18-year-old, but that's something that he could develop, you know, as he understands how he's getting pitched and how he's being attacked. I would imagine he's going to continue to get better and better. He has a mind for it too. He's a sweet kid, a dedicated kid, and he grew up in maybe not the most fortunate of situations, but with a really strong support system at the same time. So that, you know, to me, that tells me that he can deal with some adversity and know who to rely on to get him through maybe some tough times. So he is a very toolsy kid. You know, to be 6'6" and 220 pounds or 215 pounds, however big he is, he runs really well. Most scouts have him pegged in a corner outfield long term. When I watch him run around now, he'll lose some steps here and there, but he could play center at the minor league level for a couple years and then maybe get a sniff at the major league level. He's just that kind of athlete. But that's any conversation you have about the excitement of the draft starts with the second round pick, which is kind of rare. That doesn't happen so often in the draft. Usually you get most excited about whoever a team drafts first, which is not to discredit the Cardinals' first round draft pick, which was right-handed pitcher Michael McCreevy out of UC Santa Barbara, but more so to illustrate just how electric and exciting Joshua Baez is and can be. And then my general impressions of the draft is the Cardinals got somewhat reactionary to the fact that they were having a lot of trouble throwing strikes at both the major league and minor league level. And wisely, in my opinion, they tended to draft guys who you could see sticking as starting pitchers because of their control. They all have a fallback of a bullpen arm if things don't work out. But, you know, oftentimes in the draft, you draft pitchers that have really raw stuff and might have, you know, two really good pitches with a third that's developing. And you think, all right, I'm going to draft this kid because that first pitch and that second pitch, the fastball and whatever the secondary pitch is, they have a chance to take him to the next level. And then we'll work on that third pitch. We'll work on command. Well, the Cardinals drafted pitchers. The majority of their selections were pitchers. And nearly all of them are relatively command first. Now, that's not to discredit the type of stuff they have, but they all have a chance to be starters long term, not just a small chance to be a starter with a bullpen fallback. It almost feels like an old school draft, an old school Cardinal draft, where it's not necessarily all about stuff. It's about the whole package. So I like that. I believe that organization success is built on starting pitching, and I approve of what they did from top to bottom there.
Yeah, it sounds like pitching-wise what they did was they went with guys who had a relatively projectable floor, with the exception of maybe, you know, Baez, and they obviously went for his ceiling. And you're right, that is that, to me, that was a surprise pick, because, you know, a lot of teams were staying away from him because of his commitment to Vanderbilt. But, you know, the Cardinals went after him and signed him way above slot value. But one of the things I like about him is I love the attitude and the drive that he seems to bring to the game. You know, when he was at Busch Stadium and, you know, took, you know, on-field batting practice with the team and everything, he was interviewed and he said at the time, you know, he wants to be the best in the game. He wants to be better than Mike Trout. He wants to be the new face of the game. And, you know, that there's a kind of drive there that's, it's on the edge of being cocky, if you know what I mean, like a la Fernando Tatis Jr., but like just enough where it's like, okay, maybe he's not arrogant, but he's driven. You know what I mean?
And every clip that you find of him pre-draft dating back to a couple of years is that. It's that, it's almost like he's trying to convince himself these things. Like, you know, a type of like chanting meditation almost, where if you kind of say it over, you can actualize it. And he says it in a very humble way. He's been saying it since he was 16 on the perfect game circuit. He'll say it over and over again. I want to be the best. And it's not like I'm the best. Like you're saying, you gave it a great description. He just has a really humble way of showing his confidence.
Yeah, absolutely. And it honestly, it's reminiscent to me of Tyler O'Neill a couple years ago. You and I did the winter warm-up together in 2019. And what I, or was it 2020? It was right before the 2020 season, before it all got, you know, shut down. But I don't know if you'll remember, or if you were even in the room at the time, but, I asked, you know, Tyler O'Neill about, you know, having such success in the minors, but not translating it over to the majors. And I'll never forget the way that he said, you know I have what it takes to be successful in this league. It was so matter of fact, but in a way so incredibly humble. And, you know, you see him putting it together, and that's what Baez reminds me of. Like, he's got all the tools and the talent, but he's got that attitude like Tyler O'Neill has, where it's just, I know I can be good, and I'm just going to do what I can to prove it.
Yeah, I agree. I'm anxious to see what they do with him. You know, Mason Wynn gets drafted at the same pick, 54th overall, in 2020. And, of course, the 2020 season doesn't happen, so you know, he sits out, gets to spend some time at the alt camp, which was really good. The alt site during the COVID shutdown, really good for him and Jordan Walker. And when baseball comes back in earnest in 2021, both he and Walker are at Palm Beach, which is a really aggressive promotion. I think a lot of people thought they might start at the complex league level. And now with baseball going, I think that more than likely Baez starts at the complex league level, which is, now that the short season clubs don't exist, that's the short season existing. And that's where a lot of the teenagers are, the Dominican kids, the Puerto Rican kids, the Islander kids, the Caribbean kids, that's where they are. And I think he starts there, but I wouldn't be surprised if he hits really well there. And by the end of the year is at Palm Beach. And that says more about his own, the maturity in his game, as it does his talents and his mind as well.
Yeah, and I think he's got a good head on his shoulders, because he's even said he still wants to go back to school. Like, that, his education is not something that he's necessarily, you know, forgetting about. So, I mean, you're talking about a kid who seems to be, you know, pretty heady, you know, good head on his shoulders, pretty fairly down to earth, and confident enough that I think he can put it together. Now, you said something there that was, is interesting. It made me think about something. You know, with the minor league season being lost last year, and then, you know, you mentioned Mason Wynn and now Joshua Baez being, you know, drafted the same pick. How does last year hurt the development of some of those prospects? And are the guys who got drafted this year going to be, I don't know, maybe have a little bit of a leg up, or maybe have more of an advantage than they normally would have?
I think that that is a very, it's a great question, first and foremost. Where it gets really difficult is most of the 2020 picks were drafted based on a lot of years leading up to the draft. And the shutdown was relatively new still. So sure, a lot of things can change in 4 months from the beginning of March to when they were drafted in June. When they were drafted in June. A lot can change during in-game, but truth be told, most of those players, their stocks, their development, were all somewhat set by the time they were drafted in 2020. This group is at an advantage as compared to that group because they'll get to play baseball right away in an organized setting, more than likely.
Awesome.
But where they're at a disadvantage is that they missed, this group of draft picks missed an entire year of baseball, and an entire year of scouting. And a lot of like the decisions that were made on draft day for some teams were based on these samples that are divided by a lull in baseball, like a year-long lull in baseball almost. So they're at an advantage that they get to play baseball right away. Anytime you can go from baseball to baseball without a big break is big. But I also think that they're going to undergo a learning curve, you know, going from baseball to COVID to almost like pressing impression baseball to, especially with the high school kids, the prep kids, the 18-year-olds, to maybe having to ease in to what it's like to be a baseball player at the professional level as a minor leaguer. And I think that it's its own set of challenges, but it's going to be something fascinating to watch.
Yeah, no, I agree. I love that insight. Absolutely. So when we're looking up and down the system, you know, the Cardinals, I feel like their system is a lot better than most people are giving it credit for.
Yeah.
I think there's a lot of, you know, high end talent there. And I've got my list of guys that I really like, but I'm interested to know, like, if you had to pick your top five prospects right now in the Cardinal system, and I know that's hard to do because there's so many good guys down there, but if you had to pick five, who would be your top five right now?
I've been working on the Dirty 35 for maybe a month and a half now, my top 35 prospects in the organization. And I have had a heck of a time putting it all together and trying to organize it and quantify the data that I'm seeing and also the production that I'm seeing. It's been a heck of a task. I guess the first four names that come to my mind, and maybe not necessarily in any order, are Mason Wynn, Jordan Walker, Nolan Gorman, probably Matthew Liberatore, and then that fifth spot gets interesting, and this is where scouting meets production. I still think Ivan Herrera, it would have to be in the top five. He's struggled to hit offensively at Springfield, but that's one of those where when you're watching every night, it's more impressive than when you look back at the stat sheet. So I would say that Wynn, Walker, Gorman, and Herrera are still, even with Herrera's struggle, are still like solid top five picks. And I really love what Matthew Liberatore has done lately. I still think he has extremely high upside. I have some worries about his fastball, but he would be the person that I would choose to round out my top five at this very moment.
Yeah, and, you know, for a left-hander, I think the fastball plays up a little better for a left-hander than it would for a right-hander. But truth be told, I've not watched Liberatore pitch that much, so I don't know how much, you know, movement he's got on that fastball. Most lefties have some natural movement to it. It makes it a little bit more deceptive. But again, you're the expert, not me.
No, and you're right. It does have a pretty impressive amount of natural movement. Where it gets concerning is he doesn't repeat his mechanics particularly well all of the time. When you watch him from behind, it looks like he's short-legging it. So when he steps, he looks like he's short-legging it. And that kind of forces his hips to turn late. And when his hips turn late, his arm doesn't get around quick enough. his arm almost works behind his hips and behind his leg, and that causes command issues. And that's what's happening frequently with this fastball. He doesn't have quite a ton of velocity. So between like the velocity, the lack of velocity and the lack of command, it just gets him in trouble sometimes. But when he's commanding it, when he's repeating his delivery and getting his hips and his arm in sync, it's really good, especially if he's using it at the top of the zone. So it's just, you know, it's still a 21-year-old kid who's trying to sort out how to control his body and get stronger and more repeatable.
Awesome. So what are some of the guys that you think are being overlooked? I mean, because, you know, obviously you put together your, you know, Dirty 35 every year. Is there somebody that you don't think maybe people are talking enough about? Somebody that Cardinals fans can, you know, get excited about, like the most exciting name they haven't heard of?
It's fun, too, right? This conversation is a great one to have because Nick Plummer and Delvin Perez and Alec Burleson have really bust onto the scene. And at the beginning of the year, if we would have said, hey, Nick Plummer, Alec Burleson, and Delvin Perez are going to be the three fast risers, keep an eye on them. First off, a lot of people probably would have blown you off. I probably would have blown myself off. Honestly, I probably would have been like, hey, that's not going to happen. What are the chances of that? but all three of those guys have probably put them in a conversation to be a top 10 to 15 prospect in the organization. And not just because of recent success, but the way that they've changed and developed themselves during COVID time to become sustainable, to have sustainable success at the minor league. So I would say that there was a time when I would answer that question with those three, but they've kind of worked their way out of it. They're kind of in the spotlight. My personal favorite prospect is a second baseman. His name's Brendan Donovan, and he's played a little bit of third. He's played a little bit of left field too. But Brendan Donovan just hits the baseball. I believe he went to Southern Alabama. He was a fourth or fifth round pick a couple of years back. And he's just one of these, you know, you can tell he has confidence in his skills. He has a really short left-handed swing who can, you know, he can hit lefties. He can hit to all fields. Oftentimes, he'll pull the ball until they shift on him, and then he'll just kind of punch the ball to the opposite field. So you can't shift on him. He doesn't have a ton of power, but he has a little power that he can get into. He is one of my favorite prospects. I think whatever level he's at, he's going to hit. He's missed a couple games recently because he's just been nursing something, but we're kind of at the situation in minor league baseball where so many kids are playing competitively for the first time and they're about halfway through the season that they're taking a little extra care of themselves. But from a hitting standpoint, it's probably him. And then from a pitching standpoint, there are two guys that are kind of on the radar, but not on the radar maybe necessarily the way that they should be. Both of them were 2019 draft picks. Andre Payante, who is a righty. He's playing at Springfield, pitching for Springfield. He is extremely talented. He has a curveball and a slider. Both pitches are really good. Started to show signs of wear, as you would expect recently. But Payante is a really impressive kid who, at some point in the future, as long as he stays healthy, will make a major league debut. I think he's got the arsenal to be a major league starter, maybe at the back end of a rotation. I think it's there. He just needs to continue to refine and refine and refine. And then the other draft pick is Connor Thomas. Connor Thomas was a 2019 draft pick out of Georgia Tech, and he's a lefty. And when you watched him at Georgia Tech in 2019, and when you watched him enter the Cardinals organization in 2019, he really looked like a loogie. He throws from a kind of a three-quarters arm slot, a little lower than three-quarters. Slider, fastball, changeup. And the slider wasn't particularly strong. It didn't really bite all that hard. The changeup didn't have quite enough life. And his fastball was good. But what Connor Thomas has done with his skills, with his abilities, and with the COVID shutdown to get himself to be – and I don't mean this to be hyperbolic, and I definitely don't mean it as an exaggeration, but he's been the best pitcher in the organization this year at the minor league level, best pitcher on the farm. He's the best pitcher at AAA right now. They're being a little conservative with his innings and kind of pitching him out of relief right now, but You know, he started, if I'm doing it right, he started at Springfield, got to Memphis really quick, and he's pitched just as well at Memphis as he did in Springfield. He really made his slider into something completely different. He went from, in my mind, being a loogie to being a kid that I want to see make a major league debut because I don't know what to expect. Works great low in the zone, doesn't throw a lot of balls, throws a lot of strikes. And I would say that, you know, as we talk about Zach Thompson, as we talk about Matthew Liberatore, maybe Angel Rondon, who's another one of my favorites, you know, potentially contributing to the major league level, Michael McCreevy, the most recent first-round pick. I think that Connor Thomas and Andre Payante, Connor Thomas specifically, have a chance to make a major league impact in the next, you know, 12 months for sure.
Yeah, what are the likelihood that that we see one or two of them up this year? I mean, because let's be honest, one of the problems the Cardinals pitching staff has right now is throwing strikes. It might be nice to get some of those kids up there that know how.
It's funny, most people are clamoring for Matthew Liberatore to make a major league debut, and I get that. I would like to see it, especially in the next week if the Cardinals don't add starting pitching depth, you know, before the trade deadline. But the person I would like to see is Connor Thomas. It feels kind of like, now keep in mind, injuries kind of stop this from ever having a chance to manifest, but Liberatore and Thomas kind of feel like Marco Gonzalez and Tim Cooney to me. Now, their arsenals aren't the same. You know, Marco Gonzalez was fastball, changeup. Tim Cooney was a big curveball and, you know, a fastball. He could throw a changeup, you know, big loopy curveball, fastball, changeup himself. And, of course, Liberatore throws that big curveball, but that's not his best pitch. His best pitch is a slider. And his best pitch is the slider that he works a changeup off of. And of course, Connor Thomas is just like, if he's mixing his fastball 50% of the time with 30% sliders and, you know, 20% changeups or even 10% changeup and 40% sliders or any combination of those three, he's going to be effective. So the arsenal doesn't necessarily fit, but it feels kind of like that to me. And, you know, at the time when Marco Gonzalez made his major league debut, Tim Cooney was just a little bit more advanced. You know, I always would have loved to have seen what would have happened with Tim Cooney had he not gotten hurt, had he been able to build up his arm strength and return. But it kind of feels like a similar situation to me where all the eyes are on Marco Gonzalez, but maybe the best pitcher right now is Tim Cooney, a la Connor Thomas.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's great insight. And you know, you're absolutely right. And especially if, you know, if Liberatore is who we think he can be, me personally, I want to see him get as much seasoning and be as ready as possible. Because the last thing I want to see happen to him is what happened to, you know, a guy like Oviedo, who's got great stuff, but he's come up and got put into a situation that, you know, personally, I don't feel like he was ready for it. And, you know, I don't want to see a kid like that, you know, get his confidence shaken because of no fault of his own. He's put into a position he shouldn't have been put in.
Yeah, that's one thing to struggle at the major league level, and it's another thing to struggle at the minor league level. And, you know, it's tough to dig yourself out of a hole at a major league level. You know, you think about and so I guess that's all just to say, Brian, that I completely agree with you. At the beginning of the year, I wanted the Cardinals to be in a position where Johan Oviedo could get as many starts at Memphis as possible. And I think we saw in the game that he should have won, but the bullpen blew for him in his second to last start. We saw the benefits of just spending one start at Memphis. You know, during the All-Star break, he goes down to Memphis and has success, doesn't have good fastball command. But the catcher, Ali Sanchez, recognizes it and starts going slider happy. And he has great command of his slider at that time. And he starts using it and using it, gets himself out of a bases loaded situation. It proves to him a little bit in that moment that he can use it, that he can go to his secondary stuff to get himself out of trouble. And then he has a really solid start and should have got a win, but the bullpen blows it for him. And then, you know, over the weekend, he gets a chance to start and he just can't get out of the fifth. Now, if that's happening at the minor league level, it's one thing. You know, you're working with him. Maybe you can be a little bit more experimental. Maybe you can continue to go with the slider to build up his confidence in the slider and then from there build his confidence in the fastball like had happened in his prior AAA start. You can't do that at the major league level, and you don't know how it's going to impact these kids in the long term. So I am with you. I think specifically with the mechanical issues that I see in Matthew Liberatore, the repeating of it, I don't want them to look at him as somebody who could potentially save their rotation. I think that's bad for him, even if he has early success. You know, I've had a lot of people ask me about Nolan Gorman at the major league level. You know, even if Nolan Gorman were to get called up and have early success, I don't think that calling him up now benefits him in the long term. You know, I think that a full minor league season benefits him in the long term. I think the worst thing you could do, even if it benefits the Cardinals in the immediate, say he comes up and goes on one of these streaks that he goes on where he is lights out and almost impossible to get out. He's flicking home runs over the wall. I don't think that's a sustainable model for him. And he hasn't really been put in a position since coming back off of COVID to fail at the minor league level. He fails and then he gets a promotion before he can work his way out at a level. And to me, as somebody who has watched the minor leagues the way that I've watched the minor leagues over these years, that never seems to work out well, no matter how much pedigree the prospect has when they get to the major leagues, because of the wild animal that is the major leagues.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Absolutely right. Well, that is unfortunately all the time that we have for today. I mean, I feel like, Kyle, we could sit and talk about this stuff forever, and it would be an incredible conversation. I have really enjoyed it so much. So I want to thank you, Kyle, for being here and taking the time out of your day to spend with us and to give the listeners a little more insight onto what's going on down on the farm system. Do me a favor and let our listeners know where they can follow you, where you can they can find your work, and where you're at on social media.
You know, Brian, first, it's a pleasure to take part in this with you. I love talking about the system, and I, you know, when I had the pleasure of meeting you, you were such a kind gentleman, and I just love talking baseball with you. I would recommend everybody follows Birds on the Black. Ben Cerruti does. It seems like he puts out a new article every day, and he is such a talented writer. I would tell people to follow me, but I am an agent of chaos, it seems. I mean, all kidding aside, like, I follow Brian. I know you're following Brian because you're listening. Follow Brian. Follow people, you know, follow guys from Baseball America, follow guys from Eric Longenhagen from Fangraphs, all the Prospect Live guys, follow them. Eventually somebody will retweet one of the GIFs that I make of minor league baseball into your timeline. But follow Birds on the Black, follow Ben Cerruti, follow Brian, and follow outlets that deserve your attention.
Always self-deprecating and one of the kindest and most humble guys I know. Kyle Reese, thank you so much. I appreciate you being here.
It's my pleasure, Brian. Thank you.
That is all of our time for today. I want to thank you guys for being here once again, and I want to thank Kyle again for being here. Always a pleasure to talk to you. Always a joy to have on. So we're going to have Kyle on again sometime in the future, maybe after he finishes his Dirty 35, and we'll see how that prospect list shakes out. But again, thank you for being here. Make sure you check out all of the great content that we've got going on over at gatewaycitysports.com. Lots of great articles, things coming up almost daily. So get over there, check that out. And also make sure that you check out some of the other shows that are a part of the Gateway City Sports Podcast Network, Derek King's Sports Show, Team of Rivals, 2 for 3, and always listen, give us a like, give us a share out. It helps us to be able to produce more content, better content for you, and to just make this for you. Like we like to say at Gateway City Sports, we are by fans, for fans. This is all for you guys. Thank you so much. Be safe out there in the heat. Be blessed. Have a good week.